Hello, and welcome to the Twin Cities Wellness Collective podcast. I'm your host, Alex Morrell. I'm appreciative of your willingness to tune into our show today. The Twin Cities Wellness Collective focuses on helping others to be more well in all aspects of their life. The core aspects of wellness are community engagement, positive relationships, career fulfillment, physical health, financial wellness, and spiritual health. We hold monthly events featuring expert speakers to help bolster your personal wellness. As the founder of the initiative, I am always looking to spread new, innovative ideas that will help others to achieve a higher quality of life. As part of our efforts to fulfill our mission of helping the Twin Cities and beyond to be more well, I started this podcast to learn more about others' personal wellness journeys and uncover the tactics, strategies, and wisdom they employed along the way. I also look to learn more about businesses that are making big impacts on others' wellness and highlight the strategies they are using to advance wellness in our city and beyond. To learn more about the Twin Cities Wellness Collective and attend one of our upcoming events, visit our website, www.tcwellnesscollective.com. Sue Hawks is the CEO of Yes. Sue helps CEOs and their leadership teams succeed. As a best-selling author, award-winning leader, certified EOS implementer, certified business coach, Women's President's Organization chapter chair, and globally recognized award-winning seminar leader, Sue brings a wealth of knowledge and over 25 years of business experience to her clients. Sue has received numerous awards, including the Dreamkeeper Award, recognized by the Governor's Council for her leadership program, the Regional U.S. Small Business Administration Women in Business Champion of the Year Award, the Exemplary Women of the Community Award, Women Ventures Unsung Hero Award, Women Who Lead from Minnesota Business, NAWBO Minnesota's Achieve Vision Award, and named a 2018 Enterprising Women of the Year. Sue's passion is helping people design and live successful, fulfilling lives through powerful leadership, effective communication, no-nonsense coaching, and healthy teamwork. Sue and I discuss the road on her journey as an entrepreneur, how Sue conquers the difficulties that face women entrepreneurs in particular, and her advice for entrepreneurs who feel they are out of control or stuck in a rut. I hope you enjoy this podcast featuring Sue Hawks.
Cities Wellness Collective.
Hi, everybody. I'm here with Sue Hawks today, CEO of Yes. Could you just say hi to everybody, Sue?
Hi, everybody.
Thanks for being on the show. It's great to have you, and I really look forward to learning more about you and about your business. And I think to start, can you give us some background about your company and how you got started to and where you are today?
Oh, my goodness. That's loaded. Thank you for having me, Alex. A little bit about me. I randomly ended up doing what I was doing. I like to say it was baptism by fire, and it was a divine plan because it was not a straight line. What I would tell you is I took some crazy experiential, personal, and professional development programs in my early 20s, and they opened my eyes to teaching and training in a whole way I hadn't experienced prior. And doors kept opening from there that allowed me to continue to help others, whether through their businesses or directly by coaching and doing communication work and leadership development and emotional intelligence and coaching and coach training, things like that. It was all soft skills kinds of training until I found EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, and I got certified in that. So that's what I spend my time doing now. And I have written a book recently, and the road unfolds as I go at this point. I have goals out there, but I don't have a straight and narrow path like a lawyer, an accountant, or an attorney might have around, here's what I set out to do, and that's how I got there.
That's really cool. And can you just give me some insight on how you were able to be adaptable and kind of follow the path that life led you on?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it's as much learned as it is that I'm an artist by training. I have a graphic design and studio arts degree, and most people don't know that because, you know, I think we, as more liberal arts majors, eclectic things make sense to me, if you will. And so when opportunities present themselves, because my business is called Yes, as humorous and tongue-in-cheek as this is going to sound, it's very real. That's my approach to life, is if I haven't done it before, I'm like, oh, we should do that. Yeah, let's try it. And I'm innately curious and hungry to try new things. And so I think as opportunities present themselves and continue to, it's more of my hunger to go, huh, how does that fit with what's already going? Here's how I see those connections. And that's more of a way I come to the world is, oh, it would work this way and that way. And it's not a very traditional, you would put X and Y together. It's more like, oh, A and Y makes sense to me. And then there's a little bit of M because of some strange coordinated reasons. And so I would tell you, I'm very present that way to opportunities and possibilities. And when things show up, it's often just a great adventure. And so I will say yes. And then I figure out how afterwards, which has also led to some wonderful mistakes. So it's not always a seamless, you know, perfect path that has led to great success. That isn't the beauty of it.
And what have you learned from some of those mistakes?
Oh, my goodness. That I would tell you, read the book, because I share a lot of them. You know, I think a lot of it is to not be as hard on myself as I used to be. I'm 53 now. I think in my 20s, I thought every mistake was, you know, something I might live or die by. I think I was really hard on myself for a lot of years. And I'm somebody who's always striving. So I think continuing to work on that is really important for me because I tend to expect things to be great, which I think is a wonderful attribute in some regards. And in others, it lends to being disappointed with myself or the circumstances or other people when it may not be warranted, that it's just the way either things are supposed to go or unfolding. Probably the biggest thing I'd tell you is, you know, again, as somebody who strives to be high achieving, which I know you are as well, you know, when you look up and things don't go as planned, it's really easy for me to double down and try and force it or make it happen or work all the harder. And I think as I have learned in life, sometimes those doors are closing for really good reasons. And so I think as I've, again, with enough hard knocks to my head, looked up and said, when things don't go as planned, that's equally successful or wonderful because now it actually affords some other door to open up and I shouldn't try and force it or double down in all cases. I mean, some of that's good, but there's a line. And so I think I've learned some grace at this point to be able to say, you know what? That door is supposed to close. I don't know why. I don't really like it right now. And I can let that go for the moment.
That's really interesting to me. And I think not necessarily an easy thing to decide between. So for you, when you're making these decisions between doubling down or letting the door close, is it mostly intuitive for you or how do you make that decision?
Oh, it's a great question. I think sometimes poorly. I think my big decider now is I really step back and I try and disengage from the emotional reaction I have because my initial emotional reaction is still exactly the same. It's like, what? That wasn't supposed to, it's supposed to be this way, you know, and there's some level of disappointment with it. But I think for me, what I've learned to do is to put either channel that emotion somewhere else or have it and then be able to step back and assess what's going on. And really, you know, it sounds so trite, but say, what do I have control of in this situation? Did I do everything I could do 100%? Because if I really have, it's much easier for me to let go of it and say, you know, this isn't, I'm not master of the world. You know, I am not in charge of everything. If, however, I haven't gone 100% or I feel like there's more yet to do, I tend to double down. And I think it's much more about where I can assess that I've pushed too far or I've gone as far as I can or not at all. I really haven't done that.
That's great insights. And I kind of want to go back to, so can you tell us more about EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, and how you help entrepreneurs live their best lives?
Oh my gosh, yes, I would love to do that. You know, EOS is very straightforward. It is a wonderful system to help businesses and leaders get what they want from their business. We do three things: vision, traction, and healthy. Vision is helping everyone in the organization, the leadership team, all the way through every single employee, know where we're going and how we're going to get there as far as the long-term and short-term future of the organization. Traction, which is the discipline, focus, and accountability to execute on that vision. And healthy, meaning we help leaders learn how to function in a healthy, cohesive team sort of way, because often leaders aren't great team players. And so we remove politics and help them get on the same page, because where the leadership team goes, the rest of the company goes. So when we can get everyone rowing the same direction with the same vision for that, and we can have them be discipline focused and accountable to that vision in that healthy, cohesive way, all of a sudden they start to really see momentum in the company for all that they're doing. And that's really what the system does. And it's a system to run a better business, really clearly. And then there is a second part to that question that I've lost with my explaining EOS.
How do you help
living your best life?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, all that soft skills training that I've done from communication, leadership development, emotional intelligence, coaching, all of that stuff. And, you know, if you look at the topics in the book, Chasing Perfection, you know, it's all around self-care that leaders have to maintain longevity and, you know, have endurance, because entrepreneurs don't move at the speed other people do typically. Dealing with balance and what is BS about that, really, truly having actionable practices so you can be the best leader you can be, which is different for every person. I think it's a combination of some similar things, and many of them are what you teach and what you offer with the Wellness Collective, and you have to be practicing them with discipline.
Yeah, I totally agree. And when you say balance is BS, can you like fill me in on that and just explain that a little further? Because I think it's really important.
Well, I think we have, and this is a whole chapter in the book, I think we have a notion in our world that, you know, and you can look at any self-help magazine or a number of television shows and podcasts. I think we're fascinated with this fantasy idea that life is supposed to be in some perfect combination where you wake up and you bound out of bed and you're happy every day and all things are great and your family greets you and you smile all day and work is simple and easy and not challenging in a difficult way and you exercise and have this perfect physique and, you know, your mentality is centered and you have Zen moments where the whole world aligns and all of that's happening all the time and you give back to the community and you have tons of money and you can look in all different areas and say, do you know of anyone who really lives like that? And I think we have moments of that. I think we have work-life integration, but I don't think balance in this kind of fantasy way is something we attain for more than brief periods in life, and brief periods meaning minutes, maybe a day or two, hours, where we're really truly present. And so I think that idea needs to be shattered really hard. And I think we have to look at what creates alignment. And to me, alignment is when your internal experience is that of peace, joy, gratitude, all of those things aligned with external time management for those things that contribute to you feeling that way. And I think a lot of the focus when people talk about balance is the time management side of that, which most of us continue to pile in too many. I'm completely guilty of that. Too many activities trying to say, this is the combination of 8,000 things I need in my life to feel that way in all those different domains, instead of at this time in life with all I have on my plate, what is that combination? And then when we get opportunities and we add things, to reassess and realize some of it's got to go. And sometimes that's stuff we really enjoy. But at this time in life with what we're adding in, we can't do it all, because it's going to tip you into that misalignment where you're not really at your best and you're really not having that kind of internal peace, gratitude, and joy. And I think that is a moving target with our lives and our circumstances and the people we hang with and all of that stuff.
That's great. That's really helpful. And so I'm curious, how do you really think about like what to say no to? And it's funny just that your business is called Yes, but how do you reassess what to say no to?
Honest to goodness, it's so funny you say that, Alex. You're the second person in my life. I was standing in front of a group of people when the first person pointed that out in that same humorous way. And I went, oh my God. And it was like a 2x4 between my eyes. I am the last person who should be talking about it and the first person who needs it the most. And so what I would tell you is, for me, it is literally stepping back, and I have to do this with frequency. Because what I truly, the way I come to life, I believe it's all possible. That is my imprinting. It's not something I can change. At the same time, I can develop disciplines and practices to help me from myself. Because if there were 24 hours in a day, I can tell you anyone who knows me would say, you're going to pack 36 hours worth of activity into it if possible. And you're going to believe that it's completely 24 hours worth of stuff. So my husband is what I like to call my voice of reason. So I have people outside of me who have to literally, and they have permission to check my ability to do that. My staff has said to me, we do a one thing practice. It's called a one thing practice for EOS. And once a year, you set something you have to get better at. And mine for 2 years has been say no to more, because we add more in. And because I have people checking in on me, I've been forced to practice more. When I was getting certified as a coach 20 years ago, that was my practice I invented for myself, because I was at a point in life where I was very full, way over full. And during the program, which is when I met the first person who said, it's ironic your business is called Yes, they said, add in one more practice. And I remember going back to my hotel room, because I was in San Francisco at the time, and thinking, I can't add one more thing. I'll blow up. I had all kinds of chaos in my life at the time. And I went, I can't think of one more thing. And all of a sudden, the light bulb went off. And I went, I have to learn to say no. That's what I need to add. And so I developed a very specific practice, which is in the book and online in our resource gallery, that really truly is my method of stepping back. By saying yes to X, what else am I saying yes to? Because oftentimes, and I use the example of the holidays, just having Thanksgiving at our house was when I practiced for the first time. Well, it isn't just the event called Thanksgiving and everyone comes to your home. It's the grocery shopping and cleaning your house and thinking I was Martha Stewart and had to have all kinds of new place cards and beautiful things that I wouldn't do any other event of the year, but somehow became suddenly important. And it was getting my kids in order, and it was figuring out the best recipes and all these things. None of those ever hit my calendar. It was just Thanksgiving Day. And in my mind, I was having an it's a wonderful life. Everyone's coming and we're going to have a wonderful experience, all of us together. And by the time I got there, I was tired. It wasn't fun. I was stressed. I was more worried about whether my place settings looked right than whether I was engaging with people. You know, I'd host the event and then my house would be a mess after, and I would be resentful. And just telling the truth about that started to be kind of rearrange some things about this, because I really do love to entertain and love to have people over. But the way I'm doing it doesn't work. And that's when I looked at, it was the 45 other yeses that went in my calendar that I never accounted for, that I'd give up my self-care time and I'd give up time with friends and I'd give up time with my family prior because I had to get that time somewhere. And until I realized what I was trading, I couldn't make different choices.
Yeah, I love that. That's so helpful to think about. And oftentimes I feel like we're trying to do all these different things to withhold some kind of appearance for others. And I like that you realize the importance of kind of combating that and push back against that. And I want to ask this question, and just because to kind of get an overarching idea, but what does a meaningful life look like for you?
Well, you know, I think that's all there is. And I think it's such a powerful, big question. You know, in my life, it's that alignment I referenced earlier. It's being able to, you know, do a number of things. Number one, really enjoy quality time with my family and friends, because to me, the relationships are all I have. And the older I get, the easier it is to keep that really, you know, straightforward and important for me. I think it's doing work that matters, because I believe I'm helping people every day and I have a really big need to do that. So as I'm helping companies and leaders and individuals, that really validates what meaning means. It's taking care of myself, which I've learned to make a priority as of my 40s, and really taking pride in what the fullness of the word health means and wellness. It's contributing in my community and being able to give back. So I think it's that mix for me of balance. Now I'm using that word differently, of what that mix is that feeds me without being too much, like I'm overcommitted. There's got to be some gaps with space so that it's not every single minute scheduled. And one of the things I've said frequently recently is the price is really high for joyless work. And I don't mean work in the mix of like your career. It's regardless of what it is, your price is very high for joyless work. You've got to find joy in what you're doing. If not, don't do it anymore.
That's great advice. I think a lot of us are really bad at that. And I want to go back to your book, Chasing Perfection. And you kind of talk about, and I found this thread throughout the book, of as you're going through all of these adversities, and you bring up several entrepreneurs as well that have kind of faced many different types of adversity throughout their life. And you continue to talk about celebrating these small victories or these small wins. How have you built that into your routine and your everyday life?
You know, here's the thing. From that deep, dark hole where my life was falling apart, the worst that it's ever done, and it's not that it doesn't vacillate, but just to give the listeners some scope, you know, I had had Facebook, that Facebook life where people thought things were probably pretty okay, when really what was happening was I had all kinds of good things on the outside. I had a nice little family. I had a decent house in the suburbs. I had two great thriving businesses. And then lo and behold, in 2008, when the economy crashed, my businesses were in trouble. My marriage was in the process of divorce, so it was in trouble. I was separating all of that, and the world was collapsing around me. And then within a very short time frame, my businesses, my home was in foreclosure. There was a whole saga around that. And then my mom, my brother, and then my dad all passed away in a very short period of time. So when you say, you know, small wins at that time in life, I really, truly, I don't know if I was situationally depressed. I would assume I was, but I had a really, really hard time seeing winning or success or joy really anywhere around me. There were a lot of deep, dark days. And I kept wondering, am I ever going to get my mojo back? I mean, am I going to feel normal again? Because this is awful. And I had some really, truly, I would tell you, it's faith, because it was outside of me. And I had to have faith in another power. I had to have faith in my ability to recuperate, and that there was a light at the end of the tunnel. And I had to believe that, because if I didn't, I could only look at what was happening that day and it would have been bad. And so where I would tell you, you know, is if you're not seeing it and you're not in a deep, dark hole, you're already leaps and bounds ahead. But for me, it was two things that really, really helped me do that. Was I started keeping a gratitude journal, because I realized I literally daily was going, I didn't see a lot of things to be happy about. So I made myself at the end of every day before I went to bed, I thought maybe if I go to sleep thinking about the good things, I just have to get to 10 to 12 things. And I would open a page of the journal right next to my bed and I would write down 10 to 12 things. And some days I could get to more. Other days I struggled to get to 10. And sometimes it was things like, the sun was shining. And that was about how I said it in my mind. But that practice of nightly sticking to my journal and going, there are great things always happening. I've got to make those a priority. So that was number one. And the second thing was my self-care was in such bad state, such just a not working state. I started saying, I have got to start establishing a habit of winning or success. And oftentimes, and I use working out as an example, because I think we've all heard it. And in January, we all know it. You know, you should work out 3 times a week. I think everybody on the planet has heard that. And I'm like, well, who said so? You know, I'm doing zero. And to go from 0 to 3 is a lot. And I've been an athlete my whole life. I have, you know, practices, but I didn't have any at that time. And I started saying, and I felt like I really lowered the bar, but I will tell you, it's what turned the whole thing around. If I just work out once this week, I'm going to find 30 minutes. I don't care how I do that, but I am going to find 30 minutes for me. I am going to, you know, take a walk. It was as low as I could make the bar, but I was going to take a walk. I wasn't going to take care of any of the stuff going on. And once a week, and I started keeping record. And over time, what happened was every week I got it done. And I started going, I can do it once a week. And once I had done that for many weeks in a row, you know, Alex, the moral of the story, and it sounds, again, really low, but it's like, you know what? Pretty soon I was thinking, well, I can get a second one in. That isn't so hard. And pretty soon it developed back into I fit in and now make my health my number one priority in many regards. I'm not perfect at it by any means, but lowering the bar let me set up a habit of I can do this. I can do this. I'm doing this. I'm winning. Oh, I'm successful at that. I always do that. And if it's once a week, it's still once a week. It's one more than I wouldn't have done. And that's how I did it. I had to reduce things to very small parts.
That's great advice, Sue. I appreciate how vulnerable you were there. And I really like this concept of lowering the bar, because so often we hold ourselves to these ridiculous standards that are just not attainable. And we can't build any momentum to actually achieving any of those types of things. So I think that's really helpful and helpful to a lot of people. And to someone that feels out of control, or they have a lot of adversity or kind of a situation like you have been through, what advice would you have for them?
You know, I think everything I just said is where I would start for real. I would reassess priorities. And again, finding gratitude every day. I can't stress that on great days now enough. I feel like I don't appreciate and I'm not grateful enough. And I think it's also when life feels out of control like that, I think that's where you need to slow down and really take a look at your life and really go inward. And the last thing I would say is add a community of people who totally believe in you. And I don't care if that's one person or 1,000 people, but you need the people who are around you saying, you've got this, and I'll help you if you don't, and I'll remind you when you forget, and I'll be tough with you if I need to remind you. You might need to do some things that are uncomfortable to keep moving forward. But I think that forward momentum and recognizing it and documenting it, you know, I meditated, I journaled, and I walked a lot. And those things gave me both perspective, introspection, and a way to contribute to myself saying, I like me. Because oftentimes when you feel out of control, it's because you feel like life's having you rather than, wait a second, I have something to say about this stuff and how I participate with it.
That's great. Yeah, I love that. So, and let's go down another road here, because a lot of your book talks about women entrepreneurs, and being a woman entrepreneur is a lot harder than being a male entrepreneur. And I'm glad that you bring that up and kind of bring this to light. And can you just tell us about some of the struggles and some of the ways that you've found the ability to overcome some of the struggles that go along with being a woman entrepreneur?
Yes. First of all, thank you for saying that. And I think it's cool that you're a man asking about this, number one, because I think you're doing exactly what men need to do who are conscious and self-aware, is probe and ask and partner with us. So I think that in and of itself, Alex, says a lot about you. I think we have to not fight or be angry about it. I think it's a fact. I think you have to work twice as hard to get half the credit. And I think rather than being angry, being accepting of that and saying, you know, be excellent in your life. Don't prove it to anyone other than yourself, and find other people, you know, to surround yourself with who are like you. So I lead Women WPO in Minneapolis and founded the first five chapters. And, or I'm sorry, five of the first six, because I did not found the fifth one. And I think you have to persist and surround yourself with people who are doing the same thing. So I think entrepreneurs in general, but female entrepreneurs, need to hear and learn and talk with other female entrepreneurs, because we aren't like stay-at-home moms, and we aren't like, or stay-at-home parents even, we aren't like male entrepreneurs. We are our own beasts. And so we bring all of the historical, I think, traditionally female archetype stuff with us. So we want to be great moms. And at least for me, I wanted to be Martha Stewart, and I wanted to, you know, look physically attractive. And I want to, you know, like I have all of that stereotypical stuff. And then I also want to kick ass in business, and I want to be at the table making big decisions. And I want to compete in the world in a way that matters in business and be the best I can be and help the maximum number of people. So I think you have to have people around you who are crazy in that same way. And it doesn't matter whether you're an entrepreneur or a parent or a business leader. It wouldn't matter. You need to be around your tribe. And you have to be able to ask the questions that are plaguing you, because there were many times I felt tipped over going, I'm not a very good mom because my kid's getting donuts from the donut shop, not homemade cookies, you know. And there were trade-offs that I felt like I met that at times felt like I was being a bad mom instead of, because I was being a good business owner. And looking back, I would say, you know, I was a very harsh grader of myself rather than, it's different. It's not bad. You know, the kids don't mind donuts. And if they don't want to eat them, that's okay. You know, and whether you homemade or store-bought wasn't the point. The fact was I cared for my son. I was at his events. I rearranged all my work life around his events so I could do those things, but sometimes at my own expense, because I think I brought all the mom stuff forward and all the business stuff. And I think it's a constant conversation that I hear women in, especially in their 30s and 40s around. I think it's also mixed in the work-life balance thing, where it's like, how do I feel good about all the roles I play, including daughter, friend, sister, you know, board member, all of those things, and create some sense of peace with all of it and not feel like I'm failing at one or more of them at any given time. That's what I think women entrepreneurs struggle with the most.
That's great. That's helpful. I appreciate you sharing that. And we have a lot of female entrepreneurs that are part of the Wellness Collective. So I'm glad that you are helping to kind of share that and share more about kind of the struggles and how you've worked to overcome them and not necessarily get angry, but just to work through that. That's impressive. And your book definitely helped me to kind of look into that world a little bit more and see how much harder it really is. So I appreciate you sharing all that information. Just out of curiosity, for an entrepreneur that is looking to build their business or get started, but they're just not sure where to go, what direction would you say that they should start with?
You know, I think the number one thing I would tell you is similar to my prior answer, is talk to other entrepreneurs. Find out what you're getting yourself into and see if it's really up for you. What I would tell you about entrepreneurs from my perspective is we have a burning need to solve some kind of problems in our world. And we believe we've got a solution that is in some way, shape, or form unique and can be done well. And so being able to express that in the world and make money is a really key part of it. I think also for most entrepreneurs, we live in the world that by having our own business, we're going to have more freedom. And part of what I love about EOS is we restore that hope, because most entrepreneurs that I know are not truly free. They're chained to their business and they're serving their business rather than their business serving them and others. And I think they are more concerned with serving others and they forget that that business is supposed to serve them as well. And I think those are the things you have to go in with your eyes wide open on and have people around you to help you keep that clear, because we really love what we do. True entrepreneurs like you and I think we love our vocation so much. It's disproportionate to people who have jobs. I think they're saner birds than most of us.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. And your website says that Sue loves what she does every single day. Did you always find your work to be that fulfilling, or was it something that took you a while to get there?
You know, I think the statement is a big one, and I would tell you no. I mean, I love what I do. I really, really, really do. It doesn't mean that I don't have challenging or difficult days. What I would tell you is I love it enough that I get over myself really fast. And I think that's the key. My husband and I gratefully daily say we both love our work. And, you know, an example would be when we meet with our financial planner, she said to us, you know, when are you going to retire? And neither one of us authentically can age because we can't see that. And I said to her, I cannot answer that and give you a real answer because I'm not living for a day when I'm done. I love my work. Early in life, a mentor of mine, Kojo Benjamin Taylor, really successful entrepreneur, said to me, I asked him about philanthropy. And I said, you know, my real dream in the world is to be a successful philanthropist, that I will be able to donate money, but then also give my time doing exactly what I'm doing now, but for free, to a number of organizations so I can see how they use my money and contribute to them doing that effectively. He looked at me and he said, why would you wait till later? And it was just a profound question for me, because I truly, that was in my 30s, I remember thinking, you know, one day when, that's when I'll really be philanthropic and that's when I'll really, you know, double down. And it was like, why would you wait for that? How do you incorporate that into today? And it changed my world. I did many things differently because of that. So I think we have to be very clear, again, in loving what we do, to have an end game that we're incorporating in every day, that it isn't a destination, because there's too many variables that can switch and throw you for a loop. And as I talked about earlier with my deep dark hole, you know, that consumed my waking time and certainly wasn't part of my plan. My plan only had roses and rainbows and fairy tale to it, you know. So when life is happening, it's my flexibility with that to say, you know, philanthropy right now needs to look like taking care of my mom and my dad and on their journeys. And that was 11 or 12 years in my life. It wasn't as outwardly focused. It was much more insular in my family. And I found great meaning in that. And I think I did it well. And I had no regrets about it, because I went, this is my give back. This is where my attention and time need to be, not darn, I can't do the things I really want. It's, no, this is what's in front of me. How do I make that my wild adventure? And when the space opens up, then add a new chapter.
That's really cool that you've been able to kind of integrate these charitable and philanthropic practices into your life. And I kind of want to address something more directly that's been a thread throughout our conversation. But how did you go about building kind of a community or a bench of advocates that you can turn to in times where you have a question or in times of struggle? How did you find those people and how did you kind of engage them in a relationship that's more meaningful and goes beyond kind of just these small business relationships that so many of us kind of have?
You know, it's a great question. For me, there are people who I believe challenge my thinking. So I am immediately attracted to people who, when they talk, it gets my attention and makes me a little uncomfortable or a lot uncomfortable. And that's because I know I have to think to be around them and I can't get too comfortable. You know, my friends I want to hang out with are often people that I think, wow, I have to be on my A game to be around them. Those are the people that it was in, truthfully, normal business networking, people who say, you have to meet so-and-so. If I heard someone's name two or three times in a short time frame, maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I'd set about going to meet them. And oftentimes those were the people, again, that I gravitated towards because I really do believe the research says that you're the sum total of the people you, six people or however many people you spend the most time with. And I want to be around people that I'm maybe a little intimidated to be with, meaning they've achieved something in some domain of their life that I really appreciate and makes me be better. And also people that I know, if I said to them, today sucks or this thing sucks, they would be the first people to be both empathetic, but then also say, all right, what are you going to do about it? They really don't let you get too comfortable in the challenge of it. And I have sought people like that most of my life because there's a line between empathy and sympathy where it starts to be supportive of resignation. And I don't want that. I want people who are going, I hear you and I'm with you and I'm here. And at the same time, this is an event. This is an issue. We're going to work through it. Let's keep our eyes forward. And so it's random. And I never, ever truly, Alex, gone out to say, I need more of that. I just bumble into these relationships and I start to go, wow, when I'm with them, that makes me think in a way that's good for my soul or that makes me want to be a better person or challenges me to be something different than I would have left to my comfort zone.
That's really cool. And do you personally give them permission to kind of give you, I call it kind of tough love, but, or does it just naturally occur?
Both. I think it's both. I think knowing they can do that, absolutely, but it naturally occurs always because I like them in the first place because I didn't love everything that fell out of their mouth, you know, and that's where it's happening when they don't know it's happening. You know, they aren't looking at me always and saying, here's what you need to hear. They're just saying things and I'm going, whoa, I really needed to hear that right now. So I think it's both. I think the explicit permission is part of what great coaching has you do. But I think in the right relationships, when trust is high, that kind of tough love you appreciate and you seek and you're grateful for because you know they're doing it for the right reason.
That's great. Yeah, I think it's so necessary to have that in our lives. And it's been really helpful for me throughout my life to have somebody that can kind of push me when I need to be pushed and make me uncomfortable mm-hmm. when I need to be uncomfortable. So that's always been a helpful thing and a way for me to improve. So I'm glad you touched on that. And sort of as we move towards wrapping up here, I want to ask you, on a holistic level, what does well-being mean to you?
Oh, you know, I think we've covered it so much on this podcast, you know, and again, to me, it's the fullness of what well-being means. And I don't know if you're familiar with like the whole life challenge. It's things like meditation, food? What do you consume in thinking about food as a drug rather than just, you know, I can put anything in and I'm still going to look good and feel good? It's how much water you consume. It's how much you exercise. It's how much you sleep. It's whether you journal or not. It's about the people you surround yourself with and the quality of work you do in the world. It's mobilization and keeping active, you know, and so I think it's how much you give back in the community. I think it's whatever you determine wealth to be in the broadest sense of that word, from finance to abundance mindset with your time. You know, so I think well-being is being able to look holistically in your life at those things and saying, what is that mixed right now? And where do I dedicate the time I have to each of these? And do I have the mix that makes me the best version of me in the world? And if not, what needs to start moving and how do I develop practices to change that? And I think the reassessment of that with frequency, and when I say that, some of us, it's twice a year, sometimes it's, you know, every 3 months, depending on how much growth you're going through. And sometimes you hit a nice homeostasis for a year or two, and you don't have to assess as much. But the practice of assessing and looking at these areas and saying, what's that sacred mix that nourishes me to be the best me in the world? I think dialing that in is really what this is all about.
That's great. I love how comprehensive your definition is and how you hit on this point that we constantly need to be reassessing and thinking about how we're going about some of these different areas of our lives and how we're integrating them. So thank you for sharing that. And finally, kind of as we wrap up here, where can people that are listening to this and members of the Twin Cities Wellness Collective, how can they connect with you?
You know, two main places for the web, and that would be sayyes.com is one website with two Y's and two S's, or suehawks.com for the Chasing Perfection website. And, you know, keep your eyes and ears open. I speak and do retreats and events locally. So any of the above are great opportunities, and I would love to meet you in person and or any of your listeners. This is fantastic, and you are gracious and phenomenal for having me on. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing so much great insights and helping us to kind of be more well and think about our lives as entrepreneurs and find ways to be vulnerable and shatter this illusion of perfection. I loved your book, and I think all of our listeners should read it. So I'll link that in our show notes as well. And thanks for being on the show today. It's great to chat with you, Sue, and I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you so much. And one request of everyone, if you do read the book, and I'm asking you as well, Alex, please leave a review on Amazon. It helps us as we're moving toward bestseller with this book. It makes just a huge difference. So if you're willing, please do that.
Will do. Excellent. We will do that.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you again.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
The Twin Cities Wellness Collective.